together in sync.
Good morning. Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors is back in open session. Can we have a report out from closed?
Yes, the board went into closed session at 8:30 a.m. this morning on agenda item 2A, the first case, and came out of closed session at 9:19 a.m. with no reportable action taken. The balance of the closed session will be held at the end of the meeting.
You probably have to remind me, as usual. Supervisor Harris, would you lead us in the flag salute, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let's pray together. Father, we're grateful for your blessings in our life. We thank you for our Board of Supervisors who look over the work of the county and keep things where they need to be. We know there's lots of meetings, lots of time on their behalf. But Father, I pray you continue to give them wisdom, understanding, help them to see the people out there. We are so grateful for their service. As we enter a new time of the year, we are aware already of fires. I want to just lift up our firefighters and hold them in our prayers and for their safety, for their families and the sacrifices that they make at times. God, we're blessed to have people who serve in that manner. For law enforcement and all the other agencies that serve the people of Siskiyou County, truly we're grateful for the work that they do, and we give you thanks for all of it. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Moving on, Wendy, you have to do your...
Oh, yes. Let's see, the board will be convening today as the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District and receives no additional compensation.
Thank you. Item 6, presentations from the public. This time slot is for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You will be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. Written comments can be presented if so desired by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. When addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comments. Please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. I do not have any blue cards. Do we have any comments in the room?
Over here.
Any online?
None online.
Moving on to consent agenda. Wishes of the board?
I'd like to pull 7E and 7F.
E is in Edward, F is in Frank?
Yes.
Thank you.
The remainder?
Second.
And I'm sorry, who's that for the motion? Thank you. And Cobsa. All righty, Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Halp?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobsa?
Aye.
And Supervisor Oberyn?
Aye. Item 7E. It's going to be Dr. Gordon. She's got
Good morning, members of the board. Dr. Clark was unable to make it today, and I will do my best to answer your questions.
So,
Madeline Bryan, Housing Coordinator for Health and Human Services.
So, my question is on the promissory note. I know that we need low-income housing. I get all that. The difficulty I have is with the promissory note. This is a 3% note over 55 years with no principal or interest payments until the end of the 55 years. As a developer, anybody would take that deal, and I think it's pretty outrageous from my perspective, and I want to know who's going to be here in 55 years to make sure it gets paid.
Yeah, thank you for that question. We have been discussing the timing with the auditor's office and making sure that the accounts are set up properly for people to review that in 55 years. In terms of the loan conditions, what I can tell you is those were all required by the grant. The grant requires a low interest deferred loan for 55 years. Also, that time frame is the standard time frame for affordable housing developments. It matches the tax credit program, which is their primary funding source for most affordable housing programs. So our hands were tied in terms of those conditions. They weren't within our discretion.
So where does this money come from?
The funding that we are providing is from the Permanent Local Housing Allocation Grant. So it's a state grant program.
So does the county, because I see the city is in this as well, do they have an allocation as well? And this is a combined effort, I guess? Is that correct?
Right. This was a project that the city of Mount Shasta has been working on for, I believe, 10 years. That's my understanding, give or take a few years. And they applied for and received, well, I think they may have worked with the developers grant team to apply for another grant in the amount of close to $5 million that they are putting into the project.
Is it within the discretion of your department to be able to build a project like this under your department and use private contractors? Because this contractor keeps coming up, and I'm sure that they're not using, or the developer, I'm sorry, keeps coming up on these type of grants, but there, I don't know that there's local contractors that are building these. Can you answer that?
Possibly. So the contractor, I just want to separate the idea of a contractor from a developer.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
So in terms of developers, the county has not done another project with this developer before. This is our first project with Danco. Okay. You'll remember we did work on this project we've been working on first. We did try to work with the city of Arvika on a project that they selected Danco for. That project is not moving forward right now, not in the form at least that we discussed with the board.
Develop.
So this is our only project with Danco. In terms of the contractor, the developer will select the contractor, and I think that's a good question about whether or not they would select a local contractor, general contractor, to oversee the building. I don't know if we have Chris Dart online, if he wants to speak to that.
While we're waiting for that, I know Danco is, they're a known entity. I think they have other projects in other areas. I want to say Butte County for some reason, but so they're not like someone that just came out of the road.
No, I understand that, but they seem to be front and center in these type of...
This is their line of work.
I understand, and I guess that's my point.
Yeah, and I think there was a part of your question that I still need to address Supervisor Kopseth about. I know I said that the terms of the loan are required by the grant. They're not within our discretion. They're intended to match the standard of other funding sources that the state has. But in terms of like that being a good deal, so I think, you know, from the developer's perspective, by us providing that funding, they're required to have very low rents. Mm-hmm. And so the rental income is not as significant as for developers that do market rate housing.
I'd like to see the stats on that or the financials on that because they can't be in it for nothing because they don't pay property tax either, correct? I think they're exempt from that as well.
Do we have James from Housing Tools or Chris from Danco? I don't know if you guys want to address that question for more of the developer scope.
While you're waiting to see if they'll come online, on the February 6th, 2024 letter, there's an amount of $901,000. On the June of 2024, it's $983,000. But yet, on this promissory note, it's almost $9 million.
Yes, those were two separate letters for
okay.
different
and are they,
funding.
Are they the combined
combined
effort to get to that? Is that where
yes.
they're coming from? Thank you.
Yes.
Okay.
Supervisor Howe.
I just have one. Is the 3% a published state rate, or is that a cut rate that these companies are given? Because I know the federal federal government publishes a rate at 4%.
The 3% is the amount that we have been able to get approved by the state for this grant program in the past. It's considered solidly low interest, and we have to be, we can't be too much on the line when we say approve an EFC for things that we might be then doing months and months or years later if it changes. So it has to be solidly within the range that the state will securely approve that rate.
Yeah, I understand that, but I guess what I'm asking is this a standardized rate that the state uses on all investments, or is this something special for this type of project?
When you say for all investments, do you mean all investments of all kinds? Do you mean all related to housing or all related to affordable housing? Because I don't feel qualified to speak to all of it, but for affordable housing, it's a standard rate. I don't know if it's required for every, single source that goes into the project.
Well, I'm just saying that any normal banking transaction for an institution, they publish rates for those particular actions. And I'm looking to know whether or not there was some kind of special legislation that gave this low rate, or if they're conforming to some other state published rate for similar projects.
Yeah,
You don't know.
I don't know the exact answer to that question, but what I can tell you is that the format, the rules, the standards are all guided by that the low-income housing tax credit program.
I understand. I'm looking for fairness across the board with taxpayers' money is what I'm looking at. But that's the question I'm asking.
Is there okay. Looks like we've got someone who might want to speak to that.
Caller ending in 7424, you may speak. Please unmute.
Hello, this is McKenzie from NANCO.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, hi. I apologize. I was having difficulty unmuting, but Madeline and Board Supervisors, I'm here to try to assist in answering any questions that you have. There was a little difficulty here earlier.
Okay. So the property tax question.
Thank you. So Mackenzie, they were asking if the project is required to pay property taxes.
There is a property tax exemption that is on every single affordable housing project in California. There's just a blanket approval for it. And it really is a major part of the way these projects work and the way that we're able to get on the offer to offer more affordable housing to the tenants there. So it's kind of a given in any project in California. Every single affordable housing project has a tax exemption.
So it is tax exempt. Okay.
And if we could get Mackenzie's last name.
Mackenzie Dribble, is that correct, Mackenzie? Your last name, Mackenzie?
If we could get that before for later today, that'd be great.
Madeline, can you hear me? This is Jess Hinchcliffe.
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, my last name is Dibble, D-I-B-B-L-E.
Thank you.
And with regard to the rent structure, how does that formulate?
Yeah, so the rents are capped at certain percentages of the percentage of AMI it serves. So, area median income. So The units are reserved for certain levels of area median income. And then based on that, they can charge no more than 30% of whatever that income would be. So some of the units are for extremely low income, people who make 30% or less of area median income. Some are for just low income, 40 or 50% of area median income, or 60% of area median income. I believe that is the highest that the project goes. So depending on what income level it's serving, they're required to charge rent no more than what 30% of that income would be for that unit.
So Mount Shasta right now, average one bedroom apartment is anywhere between $1,200 and $1,800 a month. That's not, how does that, how is that going to come into this project where?
The rents will be lower than market rate housing, right? That's what we receive as the public by providing this assistance, is the restricted rent. You know, it's not just money for them to develop housing to serve anyone, right? The intention, so this project is a large family project. It's intended to serve low-income workforce families, and the bedrooms are mostly two-bedroom and three-bedroom units.
Okay.
So the rents will be based on income and household income for the household size intended to be in that unit. So like a three-bedroom, right, will have higher rents than a two-bedroom, et cetera.
Understood. So,
like a one-bedroom unit for the extremely low income, I think, would be about $500 a month.
Okay.
Mr. Cutler, I just asked a quick question.
Yeah.
So I think where we're headed with this is, what's the median rent? You're basing it off of a number. So what is the rent, you know, average rent for a two-bedroom or average rent for a three-bedroom? And then I mean, you can base whatever the 30, that kind of thing is. I think I need to know that.
So as I said, it depends on which area median income they're serving. And there's a mixture in the units for different levels of income.
Sure.
So for like a 30% one-bedroom, I think that would be about $500 in rent. And then for 30% area median income, three-bedroom, I don't know if you want to correct me, Mackenzie, if I misspeak, I think that would be about $700 a month.
Okay, I get that part of it.
Okay.
I can't reverse the math, go the other side. So are we
making,
based on a $2,500, math doesn't work that fast.
Yeah.
So that's what I was asking.
So those numbers are published every year. They, you know, they change a little bit, but they're published every year by the state.
For Mount Shasta, do we know what the number is for that we're going to base on?
I don't have that exact amount off the top of my head. I don't know, Mackenzie, I see someone has their hand raised. I don't know if you have those numbers up on your computer and could provide that.
The hand raised is the second woman that spoke. I think Mackenzie is muted again, and she can unmute.
Jess, maybe Jess would like to speak to this.
Marilyn, yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hi. Can you guys hear me again?
Yes.
Go ahead, Mackenzie. Okay, fine. Okay, great. So what was the specific question? Because I have the chart pulled up in front of me right now.
All of these numbers are based on percentages of area median income. And so the board is asking what the median income is for Mount Shasta.
Well, I can tell you that 100%, somebody who's earning 100% median income for a three-bedroom, it says, 100% three-bedroom would be about $2,400, but for a 30%,
so
that would be about $700.
They're not asking for the rent amount, Mackenzie. They want to know what the area median income is. So,
okay.
So just so you guys know, it's based off of, usually it starts with a standard of, I think, four people. So it tells you what the median income is for a four-person household, and then it changes that number depending on the number of people in the household. So there's many different calculations involved,
okay,
right?
So I think if it's 2,400 for a three-bedroom, I get that. And 30%, I get that's what I'm going at. I think that's the real-world numbers I'm looking for.
Yeah.
The rest of the stuff is just spinning in my mind.
So if someone was making 100% of area median income and they...
They're looking at 2,400 to find a three-bedroom house in Rochester.
But I think Jess said she had pulled up the area median income for Mount Shasta.
Yeah, so how it works is we actually just have area median income for Siskiyou County. This is published by the state. It's not specific to a city, it's for the county. And so the median income for the county for a household of four is $93,900. So that's 100% of area median income. And these units that the county is supporting, the four permanent supportive housing units, are at the extremely low income range. So that's 30% of area median income. So for a household of four, that would be $32,150 a year. So that's the income that they would have, and then they would be paying 30% of their income. So if we do a little bit of math here, we take $32,150 and we do one third of that and divide it by 12 months, they'd be paying about $800 for that family of four for this affordable housing unit at 30% of area median income.
It's closer to nine, I think, at 30% of 32,000. It's a little over 900. If I'm doing my math right. But anyway, thank you for that. So since Danko's on the line, what's the incentive to take this program on? Obviously, you're paying 3% over 55 years, but you're paying 3% on the 3% every year, I think, as well. So who makes sure this is going to get paid at the end of 55 years?
So, wait, can you hear me still?
Yes.
Okay. There is no guarantee that it will be paid back at the end of 55 years. That's the point of the soft loan. But I think that one of the important pieces there, too, is that the county does stand to recuperate 3% of that money every year in the waterfall. So, there's, we have all of our operating expenses that need to be paid back. We have a small permanent loan from Tri-County State that we're going to have hard debt service on, and we're going to need to pay that back. But, yeah, these funds are kind of like grant funds, but the fact that they are being lent into the project by the county does leave an option for the county to, recuperate some of that money rather than just grant it away. So as long as the project operates the way it says that it will, so if we can keep our expenses away, our rent, we keep the units rented, and they will eventually be able to pay some of that back to the county. But there isn't a guarantee that the whole amount will be paid back. That's the nature of the financing, and that's how it benefits the project and it brings the project.
So what's the benefit of the county then? What does the county, obviously they have to come through your department to access these funds.
Not necessarily. Only for four of the units. For the other units, someone can apply directly to the property.
But what's the benefit to the county? There's not a tax base. There's been department staff time working through this whole thing. Is there an admin fee that comes back through this? Why are we doing it?
For several reasons. The first reason is because there's a need for more housing in the county.
That's understood. I need to know the benefit financially to the county.
Yeah, I'm going to go through some of the reasons. So, obviously, we want to provide more housing for, our constituents.
I understand that, but housing for a housing for a private citizen is paying property tax. That's an incentive for the county. There's no property tax here, even though there's housing, so it's not offsetting the cost.
I understand. Besides housing somebody, you want to know what are the additional benefits.
I want to know the financial benefit to the county, period. Nothing else, okay?
Yes. So we stand to benefit by having
financial benefit?
We recuperate our monitoring of the project. We have a fee in our documents so that county staff time will be repaid for monitoring. If the project falls through, we have a fee that they would pay for the cost that we incurred to prepare this project.
By the developer?
Yes.
Okay.
By the developer.
Thank
they
you.
Will pay us for the cost to prepare it. And additionally, you know, we currently are required by the state to provide homeless services, and the extent to which those individuals can be in housing that we don't have to pay for, it reduces our costs to provide homeless services for whatever households are in those units.
This is Jeff Hinchcliffe. I'll just add one more piece, if that's okay, Madeline, that the county is also receiving admin in order to administer this grant program.
Yes,
thank
you.
And the board might remember that this money is a collaboration between all the cities and the county. So the city's delegated to the county, and so the county is also being able to use the 5% admin from the city. So collectively, it's quite a bit of admin dollars that we're able to expend in order to support both Madeline's work and my work on this program. Thank you.
Yes, we do get 5% admin from this grant, which covers, you know, our cost to work on the project.
So 5% of the roughly almost $2 million is
$100,000? Well, that's the remaining amount after we've already pulled out the admin. We received a grant in the amount of about, I don't know, Jess, you might have the exact numbers up, but about one, we have about $100,000 in admin, is that correct?
I'm pulling it up right now.
I should have got my computer hooked up to the internet so I could pull up all of the documents for you.
That's fine.
I apologize.
So the admin fee, is it one time or is it yearly?
So I want to make a distinction between the admin and the monitoring fee. Those are separate things. So we have an amount for admin that we are utilizing to work on this grant at all.
It's the amount of the grant. 5%
of the 5% of the total grant,
Okay.
And then in addition to that, we have a monitoring fee. Not part of the grant, separately from the grant.
I understand.
Danco will pay us to monitor their project to make sure that they're compliant.
And what's that percentage? Or what's that fee?
I think the annual monitoring fee is $2,500.
Annually?
Yes.
$2,500?
Can I pull up the numbers?
What was that, Jess?
So, yes, so the admin for the first 5-year cycle is about a little bit over $200,000. So that's what the county is receiving to help it with administering these PLHA funds. In addition to that, yes, the monitoring fee is $2,500 per year. And we calculated that by, we do long-term monitoring very often at Housing Tools. And so that is what we estimate our cost to be from doing other monitoring. And so that $2,500 should fully cover the county's admin cost for doing that monitoring each year. And that's $2,500 per year.
I think I've exhausted this.
So
obviously
we're the county, so we're not trying to make money on the project. But what I want you to know is we're trying to cover our bases. To cover our costs. We're trying to not,
we shouldn't be in the hole.
Right, exactly. We do not want to incur expenses to the county for trying to provide housing for our low-income constituents, right?
Right.
So we have provisions in there to try and account for that so that we are providing the service and not at a cost to the county, not an additional cost to the county.
And I guess that's my point.
Yes. It's a very good point.
I'm just trying to make sure that we're covering our base, and I don't know that,
I appreciate the thoroughness.
I hope that, with $2,500 a month in monitoring, that we can spread that to other departments, because I'm sure they, I don't know that any monitoring
that's
can
go for
$2,500 a year. anywhere. So.
So yeah. So thank you for that question. So we are seeking clarification from the granting agency that the monitoring fee is not considered program income for the grant. When something is considered program income for the grant, it then has to follow whatever the grant guidelines are for program income. But it is currently my understanding that that is not considered program income. Of course, the intention is to cover the cost to do our annual monitoring. So we, you know, that's what the fee would pay for, right, to cover those costs.
Thank you. Supervisor Valens, it's difficult for me in the arrangement that this is, but I'm not trying to hamper the project.
Supervisor, you asked very pertinent questions, and they're valid. I've never discount where you're coming from, just so you know that. And let me just say this. You know, this is something the county would never initiate per se. I have to support my community. I see the struggles daily. We're not talking homeless. We're talking the working poor. And costs aren't going down. They're going up.
I understand that.
May I add to that? Absolutely. Tourism is a major driver in Mount Shasta. And so I think the intention of this project for a long time has been for the people providing those services to be able to have housing. So it's intended to be serving people at income levels that would be providing those services that are, the basis that they need for that.
I couldn't disagree with that. But you brought homeless into this, and that's a different element than what you're talking about right there with workforce housing.
Yeah, and so the project is primarily serving low income. Only four of the units are for permanent supportive housing for families who are experiencing or at risk of homelessness. They don't have to be already experiencing homelessness. If I could tell you a little bit about my department and how we see this working out, for example, one of our longest standing housing programs is the CalWORKS Housing Support Program, and that program provides housing to families with minor dependents who are experiencing homelessness or risk of homelessness while they are trying to break down barriers to employment, right? So we have that program that we've been running for some time, and the intention is we need to support families because those kids, we want them to have, we want them to be able to be productive members of society, but for those families, we're providing that service, and the intention is that a project like this would be a place where if we're working with that family and we are, providing assistance for them in the job search and the housing search, we could help them secure additional income and employment and move them into this kind of a housing project. Hopefully, after being housed and working through that program, they could someday graduate to moving out of those units, right, into other permanent housing and free up that space for the next family that's in transition. So that's the kind of the pathway, I guess, that we see.
I understand the goal. Is this for Siskiyou County residents, and what qualifies as a resident? Is it day one when you're in Siskiyou, or is it a six-month requirement?
So it is for Siskiyou County residents. All of our programs are for Siskiyou County residents. So
what's that requirement?
If someone, just to like give you an example, if we sometimes have people who are in Siskiyou County when they apply, but if they're outside of Siskiyou County, then we terminate that application process, essentially.
How long do you have to live in Siskiyou County to be a resident?
In most of our programs, we're not allowed to put any length of time. So but they have to already be in Siskiyou County.
Yeah, so there's no residency requirement.
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know, Danco, if you want to speak to something that I missed.
I apologize. It's hard for me to hear, Madeline. Can you repeat the question?
They were asking if the project has a requirement that people live in Siskiyou County for any certain length of time before entering the project. It's my understanding that we're not allowed to have that kind of requirement, but I wanted to confirm that with you.
Yeah, we can talk about putting together what the project always has is a tenant selection plan, and we can work together to see if there's any way that we could have any kind of preference for different populations or like people that come from Siskiyou County, something that I've heard recently. Generally, we haven't done that, but as long as it's in violation with any state or federal laws, you can create a tenant selection plan that has specific parameters.
Thank you, Mackenzie. If that is something that is allowed, I think that would be the county's preference.
I would hope that, because obviously the need would be for Siskiyou County residents.
Right. I mean, specifically for the units that we would be assisting to fill, we have waiting lists at all times, right, of current Siskiyou County residents waiting to move into those projects. So in terms of that, we have lists that we already monitor, and when someone moves out of the county, we exit them from that list. So that's kind of, you know, we already have a list of residents in need of housing that are working with us in some way.
And I know in the Wairika project, that's not going to happen. We were able to, I think, talk about a veteran's preference. So is that something that can be added to this as well?
Mackenzie, would you like to speak to that question?
Be helpful if she just stays on the line.
Yeah,
maybe just don't unmute Mackenzie. I mean, don't mute after you unmute.
That would be my expectation anyways.
So that's my preference.
Yeah,
I'd say it again. I say it every time.
But I think that was one thing that was a little bit different about this project from the Mount Shasta project. I mean, from the Wairika one, was that this project was way further down the road, like shovel ready when we came to it, and we provided the last amount that they needed to get awarded the state program and get started. So we have, I guess, we're really the junior lender, providing the smallest amount of funding and coming in last, so we don't have necessarily as much involvement as we did with the Wairika project. Mackenzie, is that you?
I'm sorry, I keep muting me. Did you ask a question about Wairika? It's hard for me to hear.
They were asking if veterans receive
preference
for the units.
That's not a part of this particular program.
Could it be?
Just to add a little bit more context, Milo, can you hear me okay?
Yes. That's okay. Jess Hinchcliffe.
Yes, sorry. This is Jess Hinchcliffe from Housing Pool, Senior Project Manager. We're a consultant to Siskiyou County. Right, so this project, as Milo mentioned, has been in development for over a decade. It is with the tax credit program. It's a large family project, so the focus is on low-income families, homeless families, and families at risk of homelessness. So that's the focus of this project. That being said, if a veteran is part of one of those families and they meet the qualifications, of course they'll be served by the project. It's just not targeted specifically to veterans. And that's because this project has already gone through all of its funding. It already has all of its funding in place. So we can't add an additional layer of qualification on top of that at this moment, but veterans can absolutely be served by this project if they meet the other qualifications.
Yeah, I'm not looking for housing for any veteran. I'm looking for housing, you know, for veterans who do fit the categories.
Understood. What Jess is trying to say is this project was so complete already when we came to it that the population was determined, and I think at this point what is within our purview and what we have control over would be the county's selection plan, right? We have that list that I told you about where we help connect people from that list to housing. That list is not a first-come, first-served list. It is a prioritization list. Obviously, we have criteria we have to follow. We always do. But I think within that list, we would have the ability to add veteran preference on that list.
Thank you. That's about all I can ask. I did have one simple question.
Yeah.
Searching through all the material, is there any effect to the general fund with this?
There's zero impact on the general fund.
Okay.
Other than no property tax base.
Right.
Right.
I'm just looking for unwanted expenditures.
This is kind of like the project that didn't go through, where we brought the project in concept and an outline already for approval. So this is really about the details of the documents.
And I see that's the difficulty that I have.
Mm-hmm.
We go through all this at length over 10 years, and then we get to the details at the end of 10 years. Mm-hmm. When at the beginning of 10 years, this is what should have come up. But I know it's state funding, and I know that the philosophy is it's not our money, but yet it affects our constituent base, who's paying a tax base. So I get that we need the housing. I don't quarrel with that. I would highly prefer that it be at least a 6-month Siskiyou County resident, and that veterans would have a preference in the category of how they do that.
I will look into every possibility open to us within the law to ensure your residency request is met.
So if I could just say one thing as an aside, I know we struggle with homelessness, veterans, all these things. There was a group down in Mount Shasta that was looking at quote-unquote city property for veterans housing only. If it's so important to us, and it is, let's put that on the table as an aside. Let's not forward up a project because without a doubt in my mind, if someone says they're a veteran, bias will tell you that they're going to get a preference, right?
I hope.
Now, I get that we have to work within a criteria, and that's the problem we always struggle with. Again, I can't reiterate enough that South County, where I live, the city and community, I see it. I see the struggles daily. I see the people that are couch surfing. I see the people that are struggling with one or two jobs. I see when my wife says, I go to raise and the prices keep going up, it's like, I don't know how people do it. And so when we talk about working poor, and as an aside, and I'm not... I was a working, my mom was a working poor. We struggled. And you work hard to get out of that. And if we could take out some of the stressors that are involved, families, for God's sakes, they are not going to fall through the cracks and be more dependent on county services, particularly in behavioral health, where we struggle to provide services. That's at least moving the needle. Again, we're a 49th in county by the metrics. At this point, I just want to get to 49. Can we try to move the needle? I think this at least is part of the process. If there's any more dialogue, I'd be happy to make this motion to move down the tap.
There's our motion.
Make the motion to do what we need to do.
The recommended motion for the item. Thank you.
You have a second? I have a second.
Thank you.
Alrighty. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes, please.
Supervisor Howe?
Yes.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff?
I'm an aye, but only be... you've heard my criteria for this, and anything that comes future on this, if the criteria is not in the details in the very beginning, when we get these doggone letters, I'm not going to do it in the future, but I'm a yes.
And Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to 7F.
Thank you, members of the board.
Don't go away. Somebody has to come up. 7F.
So this is just a quick question. On the contract liability, there's two different amounts. I know we require $2 million, and in one spot it has liability of $1 million, and another it has it at $2 million. So which is it? Or is
the
it?
Liability should be at $2 million.
It's both. It's at one and two in the contract.
The general liability should be $2
million. And?
And?
What's the other liability? Is there two different kinds? I'm sorry, I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm trying to dig it up.
I know general liability is at two. The templates were just recently changed.
Yeah, I know, and I know we've gone to this $2 million, but
the audit.
I'm struggling with the one and two in this. Hold on, let me see.
Through the chair, Angela Davis, yes. Are you referring to the workers' compensation as well as the indemnification?
I believe it's the indemnification is at $1 million and the general liability is at $2 million.
Sorry.
It's on page 3. Mm-hmm. Section
3?
Section 5.05 and 5.06.
Yeah,
6.
5 and 6. That's what I'm looking for. Okay, yeah. So why are they different, though? Why is the indemnification only $1 million and the liability $2 million?
Haley Hudson, Deputy County Administrator. I'm pulling it up now to see if I can read what you're looking at.
And if I can get your name, ma'am.
Evelyn Sipple, Administrative Services.
Thank you.
For Behavioral Health.
And it says further in 5.505, contractor agrees to maintain policy of liability insurance in the minimum of $1 million.
So in 5.05, the $1 million is referring directly to the insurance that would allow them to indemnify the county for that amount. So it's referring specifically to $1 million to cover such claims for anything that would come up in indemnification reasons. But then 5.06 is referring to $2 million per occurrence for the commercial general liability, and then the next $1 million per accident, that is referring to automobile.
Yeah, I got that. But I guess, what's the difference of the liability insurance in the indemnification and the liability insurance in the general liability? Why is that different? What is the difference? Because the indemnification is just as important, isn't it? Or am I wrong? If I'm wrong, help me out here.
And I would love to be able to tell you if you're wrong or not, but I don't have that answer for you, but I can get that further. Unless if Natalie, can you speak further on the indemnification portion?
So the contractor is required to maintain $2 million in liability insurance, but then in the indemnification provision, it just requires $1 million to back the indemnification, but agreed that we would probably want to look at that and consider making those consistent.
Yeah, I agree. And these numbers come, just for your information, they come from Alliant, and they have a guide that we go by to make the recommendations, and those are the limits that are in the guide, so those are the limits that we have recommended. But we will look further into keeping them more consistent.
Yeah. Well, and I know it's difficult for some to even come up with the $2 million.
Correct.
But yet, the indemnification part to me would be just as important if we're going to go to $2 million.
Yes.
So, anyway, I'll move to approve, but if you guys can take a look at that, because it just looks inconsistent.
Of course.
I'll second.
Thank you. Call for vote, Wendy.
All right. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yeah.
Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
And Supervisor Ogren?
Aye. Okay. Wendy, are you okay? Do we need a break before we move on to item 8?
Let's go ahead and go item 8A.
Okay. For quick housekeeping, seems like the Microsoft team meeting link could be on the fritz.
Correct.
So people were going to have to call in if they want to hear us or speak.
Because they won't hear us unless they call.
Right, they won't hear us.
This is how that works. So, sorry, folks.
Yeah.
But they'll figure that out. Okay, item 8A, discussion, direction, and possible action regarding the appointment of Mr. Adam Filippone.
Filippone.
I remember that, right. Right. As Director of General Services effective June 8th, 2025.
Angela Davis, County Administrator. Good morning, Board members. It is my honor and privilege to request recommendation to appoint Mr. Adam Filipponi as the Director of General Services at Step 4 of the salary range, effective June 8th, 2025. He went through the recruitment process and was the successful candidate, and we are overjoyed to have him join the county team. He's been a long-term Siskiyou County resident, and we look forward to working with him. So, Mr. Filipponi, why don't you come on up so they can see who you are before they vote? So no pressure, but so I am seeking the appointment of Mr. Filipponi.
I'll make the recommended motion.
I will second that.
You want to vote first?
Yep.
Let's hear from him first.
Oh, you're going first.
Good morning, Board.
No easy path here.
Thanks for having me and everybody else in the room. I appreciate it. I'm pretty excited about this position. I was born and raised in Scott Valley, and I'm ready to make an impact on my community, the community that raised me. I'm here as an asset manager to try and improve our projects and also make sure that we can get in the black on some of them. So any questions, please reach out to me. But I'm here to help, and I'm excited for this new role.
Now we'll vote.
All right. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Howell?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye.
And Supervisor Ogre?
Aye.
Have you met Ms. Skillen in the back over there?
I met her this morning, actually.
Thank you.
I'm very excited to start working with her.
Thank you.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you, Board of Supervisors.
So if we could take a quick break, and I've got something for you.
Absolutely.